First of all, I want to welcome everybody to thank you for getting on the call and to please welcome everybody to please continue to be in touch with our offices and let us know how we can help and support you in this time, and to thank not only our members but the teachers and cantors who are on the call for helping all of us to fulfill our mission of creating a supportive community for Jews and their families wherever they live in whatever circumstances they may encounter. Dr. Katie Eisenstadt graciously agreed on short notice, obviously, to conduct this call for us because what we observed was that people were reporting that kids were starting to come back to religious school, to day school, to the synagogue, some of them still in homes without power, some of them still not in their homes. And rabbis and teachers were bringing up questions about how to be most supportive of those kids, how to create transition back to safe space, how to support their parents and their families in rebuilding trust and confidence and a sense of security as they try to return to normal. Dr. Eisenstadt is a clinical psychologist practicing in Manhattan and in Westchester County, working with young people and families as well as adults, and with extensive experience in helping children and young people who have been through frightening experiences. Dr. Eisenstadt will speak for a little bit over 10 minutes or so to give us an overview of some tips and best practices, and then we will take questions. She will take questions, I should say. So now, Dr. Eisenstadt, we turn the call over to you.
Good afternoon. I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to speak with you. I hope you're all safe, warm, and recuperating from the various challenges that Hurricane Sandy presented to you. I'm not used to talking to people that I can't see, but I hope to connect more personally in the Q&A. I can only imagine the difficulties you're facing in caring for and responding to the children in your care post-Sandy. One common, rather universal feeling in difficult times is to seek to alleviate our own feelings of helplessness by helping others. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to assist you in the ways in which you can be helpful to children and parents. I'm so glad to contribute to all that you, I'm sure, have already been doing. The first place to look for ideas at a time like this is to look inward, inside ourselves. Whatever feelings we may have will surely resonate with others. If we examine our own feelings, we may find a variety of reactions, including our own fearfulness even after the crisis is over, perhaps reoccurring memories of scary experiences or TV images, a feeling of irritability or sadness, difficulties concentrating and focusing on the tasks of life and on everyday routines. Children, too, experience these emotions and to varying degrees have observed these reactions in the adults who care for them. Recognizing these feelings in ourselves and taking charge of them is important in conveying a sense of security to children. Kids look to adults to get their cues as to how to react. If you react without alarm, they will follow your lead. If you are overcome with a sense of loss, they may feel their own losses more strongly. Your words and actions can provide reassurance. One way to help children with their feelings is to give them an opportunity to tell their stories of the hurricane, to share their experiences during and after the storm. It is preferable to do this in small groups, such as classes, with familiar teachers and principals. Often it helps to have an opportunity in staff meetings to tell your own stories before you try to help the children. One caution, however, is to be careful when you're talking to other adults within children's earshot. Don't air your anxiety or go into troubling stories which may be misinterpreted by kids. Excited and nervous talk by grown-ups is frightening to kids. You can begin the conversation with children by asking them what's uppermost in their minds. Ask them to tell what happened, where they were, and with whom during the hurricane, and even where they are now. Start with simple questions, a fact. Sometimes it helps to start the ball rolling by sharing a small, not too scary experience of your own, including how you managed, how you coped. Of course, not all children are willing or able to share. Those who can't should not be pressed to do so. Some of them may not be ready to talk, but will still benefit from listening to others. If they ask questions, answer them honestly and as simply as possible. It's helpful in talking with younger children to explain what a hurricane is, so it's good to prepare. Facts can help children to settle down. Young children in nursery through early elementary grades may benefit from drawing pictures rather than or in addition to using words. After giving children some time to share their stories, it's important to make sure that the conversation includes ways in which they and their parents were able to cope. We want to support coping strategies during the crisis, immediately afterwards, and even now. Giving children a chance to describe how they and their families coped, for example, using lanterns and flashlights, snuggling with each other to keep warm, sharing their homes and food with others, and connecting with family and friends, and all the other ways that you'll hear about, give children the sense that in spite of the difficulties, they have the ability to recover and move forward with life. We want them to emerge from the experience of the storm, having a narrative of coping rather than a narrative of fear. That is true about most children because most are resilient and will bounce back from their experiences. Some are, however, going to need special attention to recover and feel safe again. In general, children will react differently to a hurricane depending on their age, developmental level, and prior experiences, particularly of trauma. Nursery age and preschool children may show their anxiety in fear of separation from family, and you may find them clinging to their parents after early good adjustments to school. Young children also sometimes regress to earlier behavior, such as baby talk and tantrums. Older children may become worried about future storms, which you can observe in them by their continued and repetitive, incessant talking about the hurricane. Others may become increasingly sensitive to sounds of thunder, wind, and rain, or even bad weather forecasts. In addition, you may observe the following behaviors continuing for many weeks after the hurricane. If you do observe the behaviors I'm going to describe, it will be important to alert their parents. These include changes in mood, listlessness, restlessness, difficulty concentrating and following directions, angry outbursts, and aggressive behavior. Concern is only warranted if these behaviors continue in a prolonged fashion. Right after the crisis, many of these behaviors are fairly typical. Now, most children can be reassured. They can be helped to feel safe. And here are some ways that you might want to do that. Number one, talk to children about the ways the community has responded and is responding to the hurricane. Begin with what the synagogue or school has done. Describe safety measures in place in the building, such as backup generators, reinforcements, emergency drills, etc. If your school or synagogue opened its doors to the community to offer warmth, coffee, or a place to charge phones, tell the children about it. talk about the government's response in working hard to restore electricity, phone and gas, and in providing shelter for those in need. Irrespective of your political orientation, talk positively about the president's concern for and hard work in protecting and helping citizens. Children are reassured by the fact that adults in the world are in charge and making things better. Two, children benefit from familiar routines, although it's important to give them opportunities to tell their stories of the storm. It's also vital that your school return to the usual routines in classrooms and in the building. In the middle of disruption and change, children will feel more secure with structure and familiar routine. Three, maintain your expectations. Stick to your rules about good conduct and respect for others. Four, engage children in activities that help others but also allow them to have fun. Don't maintain a too somber atmosphere. And five, keep things hopeful. Your positive outlook on the future will help children see the good things around them. Explain that while some or many things may have changed, there are always people and places that help keep your family safe and comforted. Finally, I want to share two other observations. The first is that children can be adversely impacted by the hurricane even if they themselves haven't experienced any difficulty at all. Images on the TV screen and adult conversations may be frightening. Since these children haven't had direct experiences, they also haven't had the opportunity to cope. These children sometimes end up with post-traumatic stress of the bystander. Please make sure to keep an eye out for these children, too. Second, and particularly in Hebrew schools, we need to be thoughtful about how we speak about God in relation to the hurricane. It is common to hear people whose homes have been spared to say, God was watching over me. While this may be a statement of gratefulness, it can raise questions about God's care or absence in those situations where people were less fortunate. I leave it to you to find ways of speaking about God and faith in ways that are comforting for all. I think I'll stop now and give you time for questions. Thank you again for having me.
So anyone who would like to ask a question, you can press star 6 to unmute yourself and ask a question.
So while people are figuring out their questions, again, you can press star 6 to unmute yourself. Okay, Julie?
Dr. Eisenstadt, thank you. I have been, getting some calls from rabbis, and there are many people won't be restored or homes won't be repaired for several weeks or even months. And it's not an uncommon experience, an experience shared by tens of thousands of people at least. And some of those people are able to shelter with others in the community. Some who don't have power turned on are still able to remain in place with generators, et cetera. I'm wondering if you have, any particular advice to help children sort of start to understand kind of these long periods of time in which their routines are still disrupted and yet to maintain that sense of hopefulness.
Children always need to have answers that have to do with the nuts and bolts of what they're experiencing. They want to know the facts. If we don't know how long the disruption or the dislocation is going to take place. We need to say we don't know, but here are the things we're doing to work on it. If there's a generator and it's working only part of the time, we need to explain how we're keeping some power going by shutting off lights in some of the rooms. Kids really want to know the facts of what's going on. And the second thing they need is what I think I'd like to present as a mantra to you, which is children need to hear that although much has changed, the very important things have stayed the same. And it's really important to talk about what those are. In families that have remained intact, where everybody is safe, it's important to say we're all still together. It's important to talk about how we feel about each other. It's important to talk about what we're doing to care for each other. That these are the abiding things that have stayed the same, even when so many things are different.
Okay, Dr. Eisenstadt, it's Jan Costa here, and I have a question for you. I have a couple of questions for you. One is, a lot of our colleagues deal with adolescents frequently. You know, in B'nai Mitzvah classes, a lot of rabbis have direct contact with those students, you know, in confirmation class. And I'm wondering if you can say anything about how we talk to the 14-year-olds and the 15-year-olds about this. They're well aware. They watch television. You know, they go online and look at news. You know, they're not in any way shielded from this. And how can we give them comfort, stability in their lives?
Right. Adolescents, too, need to tell their stories. I should have included them, too. We all need to tell our stories because telling each other is therapeutic. But adolescents in particular need to be able to do things. Adolescents need to feel useful. And I think talking with adolescents about what's going on in their communities that they can become involved in becomes a really important piece. And so that's what I would certainly recommend, that once they have an experience of sharing what's happened, the discussion moved to what things can be done. And it can be lots of things. It can be collecting clothing for children who need it, for others who need it. Or it can be how you can be comforting to a friend who, while you still have your home, has lost his or has to move in with somebody else. I think discussions about how to be good friends and how to reach out beyond just the superficial is a very important thing to talk about with adolescents.
Thank you. I have another question because you brought up something when you said children should draw pictures and not only words. That prompted me to ask the question about asking questions of children. Should educators, rabbis, cantors, preschool teachers, should we initiate conversations with children? Is there an age bracket by which we should just not initiate conversation and an age bracket by which it's okay to start asking questions? Is that better or is that worse?
I'm not so sure about asking the questions. I think making opportunities for them to tell their stories. And I think that's what I was talking about, that when children first come back to your schools and to your classrooms, whatever their age, I don't think you can just say, open your chumash or your siddur. I think whenever that is, and if you've already started and you haven't given them an opportunity to do what I'm talking about, it's certainly not too late. You need to start with, we've all been through something, and here's what happened to me, what happened to you. I don't think that children are too young, except if we're going to talk about two-year-olds. But once we're even into 3- and 4-year-olds who have language, asking simple things like, do you know anything about the big wind that came? Was there a big wind in your house? Did you watch the rain? Did you see any leaves falling down? So we have to start in the most simple way with the youngest children and then move up in language as we move certainly into elementary school and into adolescence. Also, with young children, they will want to play act what happened. And so we want to be observing them in their play activities. I'm sure you will see some reenactment of some of the things that have happened. And that's an opportunity to, through the play, talk about the characters in the play that had to move or lost their favorite bunny or had grandma and grandpa moving in. So stick with the play and stick with the story that they're creating with their play figures. And that's another way, without even talking directly to them, that you can help them to master what's happened.
And my last question is that in less than 2 weeks we have Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine it's going to be a very traumatic time for some families.
Mm.
Is there a unique message that we should share in advance, maybe something that we send home to parents, discussions that we have with kids, you know, honing in that message? Because a week after Thanksgiving finishes, we have Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, such a joyous holiday and a holiday of light, and so many people may still be in darkness.
I think the message of both Thanksgiving and Hanukkah is really a message of togetherness and of family and friends. And that's part of the coping that really has taken place in these children's lives. That is, people extending themselves to others. I think this is certainly going to be a time when people will seek to give to others. And I have a feeling that even if people have never volunteered in a soup kitchen, they may want to organize their families to do that. But for those people who are going to have to celebrate Thanksgiving or Hanukkah at friends' homes, or even more so, there are people who will still be in some kind of shelters, I think it's going to be about how the synagogue and the school is going to reach out to them to help them to still have a celebration. It's also important to allow children who are going to express some of their sadness about how different this holiday is. It's important to let them say it, to be empathic to the fact that things have changed, and yet to be hopeful about the fact that in time things will get better.
Okay, again, does anyone else have a question? You can press star 6. And put yourself in the question queue.
So thank you, Jan, and thank you, everybody, for being on the call. I think if we don't have further questions, the theme of Thanksgiving and of Hanukkah and togetherness and is really a good place for us to close. I want to thank Dr. Eisenstadt for these very concise and helpful ideas, which I think will be helpful not only to those people who were able to be on during this hour, but to our many colleagues who are not able to join the call at this particular time. I know that I learned a tremendous amount and have now a number of what Jan called mantras in my mind, for how to work with people going forward. And it's also very helpful to us as an organization to be able to develop further materials. If any of our colleagues on the call have follow-up questions or this has raised certain ideas that you wish to follow up on in more detail, please get in touch with me, and we will try to get those questions answered with Dr. Eisenstadt. And
I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And And with that, we will close the call with appreciation to everybody for your dedication, not only in difficult times, but in the ongoing ups and downs of the lives of your community over decades and decades. So thank you again, everybody.
I'm going to turn off the recording now, but it will be posted to our colleagues. Thank you.